If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Power Slam podcast here at Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Finn Martin, and we are going to be here to talk about SummerSlam, talk about ratings, talk about Inside the Ropes, the magazine, and so much more. But before we do, we need to talk a little bit about beer. Free beer, which is the best kind of beer, if you ask me. You know, we're coming to the end of the summer. COVID has been killing us, I'm sure you all agree. What better way to celebrate and close the summer off with some of the best beer on the planet? We are partnering up with our new sponsor, Beer 52. They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR, and all you need to pay is the £5.95 postage. But you get the 8 beers completely for free. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. They've got over 150,000 members. They send brand new cases out every month. Each month's case is a different theme. So there's ones from New Zealand or South Africa or the US, Europe, all across the shop. And as they're an independent company in Britain, Beer 52 are passionate about the UK craft beer scene, and they continue to support it during this difficult time. But don't worry, if dark beer is not your thing, I'm more of a light beer guy. If dark beer is not your thing, you can choose the light option, and the case will come with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment. Still love that word. And a tasty snack. But don't worry, if you change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account anytime. So if you want to take us up on that, just go to www.beer52.com/ITR to get your first case of 8 beers for just the £5.95 postage. That's www.beer52.com. That's the numbers 52 /ITR. Now, Finn, you're a fan of beer, so you will probably be quite up for that. But how are you?
Yes, indeed I am. And I know a couple of guys in my hometown who are beer festival regulars. Obviously, beer festivals aren't occurring at the moment, so they'll probably be signing up for that as well. But yes, I'm very well, Kenny. Been there. A few developments since our last communication.
There have. Inside the Ropes, the wrestling magazine, has been launched. First issue coming out September 17th. And the pinnacle of the magazine is Finlay Martin will be writing for this magazine. This is bucket list stuff for me. This is something that's kind of come up kind of out of nowhere when, you know, very recently this idea came into fruition, and, you know, it wouldn't really have been possible to do without people like Finn on boards, because if you're going to do a wrestling magazine without Finn Martin, you're mad, if you ask me.
Well, there's lots of other people involved as well, Kenny, isn't there?
There is. We've got the editor, Dan Richardson. We've also got Brian Elliott from FSM. We've got Keith Elliott Greenberg, formerly of WBF magazine. We've got Bill Apter, who, you know, I think pretty much started wrestling magazines, if you go online. So we've got a great team. We've got loads of other people as well. But it's exciting.
Hey, plus we've got Sandra, and we've got Kenny himself. You're contributing something to the first issue, aren't you?
I'll be contributing something every single month. The good thing is, this is a severely, you know, intense case of nepotism, because you can't do this magazine without me. So I get to just do any old dribble. No, it won't be dribble. I will take it harder on myself for it to be good than anybody else. But yes, and I'm doing an interview in the first issue with the Nature Boy Ric Flair, which is really exciting. And I think we can say this, Finn, but you'll be doing some interviews as well. It's going to maybe be like a pass the baton now and then for us to do interviews each, so people can get to read me do interviews, but they can also get to read some of that Finn Martin interview intensity.
Well, yeah, some of the difficult questions, Kenny. That's what needs to be asked. You can't bottle it, as we used to say at Power Slam. Don't you bottle it on that question.
You got to ask the question. It's exciting, right? It's exciting for us to do this, and I think there's a market for it out there, and the reception's been great so far.
That's it, yeah. The reaction's been really good, and you know, we're all working on it now. We're all coming up to deadline. Deadline will be next week. I mean, I've already done about half of what I'm contributing to it. I'm looking forward to getting the rest of it finished. And I'm excited to see what the magazine looks like. I mean, as you say, there's a really good team assembled. and we're all gung-ho for this. You know, we want this thing to succeed, and we hope you're going to join us on that one, on this journey.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, this is, it's definitely a passion project, I think, for all of us, because we all love the concept of a wrestling magazine, but we also believe that it is the right thing to do, and this is the right time to do it. And, you know, we did the hashtag, the last read, and it's because, you know, you've essentially got all these sort of powerhouses, the Mount Rushmore of wrestling journalism. I did not put myself on there, don't worry. But
not a journalist.
I'm coming in here. It's a business idea that we all feel pretty strongly will work, and is, it's the time to do it. So, and without giving away what it is, I think if you are, if you're somebody who's never bought wrestling magazines before, I think you're going to just love it, because it's just this bright, vibrant new thing. But if you're someone, I'm going to tease this as little as I can. If you're someone who used to buy Power Slam, you're going to open it up and you're going to see some familiar Finn Martin stuff that is going to blow your mind. It's going to be great. So, I'm very excited.
Indeed. Yes, yes. Well, I am as well. Yeah, there's, it's, I mean, you've already done the interview with Ric Flair, haven't you? We should just point that out. It's not going to be this interview that might happen. It's already done.
And the thing is,
you told me it went really well, and yeah, I'm doing some I'm doing various things that will be familiar to people, but obviously we'll have a modern twist on them. And this is not going to be a rerun. This is going to be, there'll be some familiarity there in a sense, in the way it's presented, but everything in here is going to be, you know, genuinely original, brand new, and for September 2020, and for people, you know, for an audience that's living in September 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the one thing I will say, just as a kind of little behind the scenes story, which is I think is interesting, is you know, there was the discussion of who's the cover star for the first issue, and then I found out that it was going to be Ric Flair. I was going, right, so I've never done a magazine interview before, and the first one that I do, it needs to hopefully be good enough to warrant being the cover. So I had to call Finn and get some advice. I had to sit under the learning tree a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's a weekly occurrence, isn't it, Kenny?
That was good.
But the interview went well, and that's the thing. Listen, it did. When you're doing an interview, sometimes you just don't know how it's going to go, and it doesn't matter how experienced you are. You're never quite sure what's going to happen, but this went well. That's the important thing.
And the other thing, I always remember something that Sean Oliver, who did Kayfabe Commentaries, had said. He'd done a live U-shoot thing with Dixie Carter, and he'd asked her all the questions that everybody wanted, you know, for her to be asked. And she never gave the game away. She never, you know, she never admitted to people on the internet, I was terrible at my job, because she's never going to do it. So you can't really control an answer, but it's your job to push it. And get the good stuff. So, yeah, very excited about it. You can go to InsideTheRopesMagazine.com today, and you can either purchase the first issue, which will come out September 17th, or you can take the leap and do an annual subscription. And, you know, we're in this for the long haul, so there's no danger in the old annual subscription. And if you are not, you know, maybe you live in another part of the world and you just want a digital copy, on September 17th, there will be a digital copy available as well. So we're covering all the bases, Finn.
You have to do that, and we're doing it.
But in the meantime, there is so much stuff to talk about in the world of wrestling. So let's get straight into it. I thought, yes, first of all, we could have a little bit of a chat on ratings, because the ratings across the board have been interesting. We've got the first SmackDown and Raws from the Thunderdome. We had AEW doing a Saturday night show. We had NXT going unopposed last week. Anything from any of those four numbers that you thought was newsworthy or noteworthy or shocking?
Well, I mean, it was obviously really good news. I think it was good news for pretty much everyone, really. I mean, if you look at like Raw, the night after, I mean, the first Thunderdome episode was, of course, SmackDown on Friday. And that did the best number in quite a few weeks. First hour did 2.189 million viewers. Second hour did 2.146 million viewers. So, I mean, that held up really well for SmackDown on Friday with new Thunderdome concept, you know, in the big arena with the lasers and the LED boards and all the pyro and everything like that. And, you know, giving it that big time feel, that, you know, main event, you know, world-class state-of-the-art flavor, which is something that's been obviously missing from WWE's on-screen presentations since, what will it be, March, February?
March, yeah. The last live show was March the 11th or something.
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks after the Saudi show, wasn't it? So
yeah, because they were supposed to do the Raw on March 16th because it was Steve Austin 316, and that was the first one they had to do in the Performance Center.
Okay, so I mean, for the first time in 5 months, it felt like it WWE again, didn't it? It felt like you're watching a WWE product, not quite to the standard or expectations of how it was in, say, February, but certainly much better than the Performance Center. They got out of the shed, you know, and into the big, bright, brassy arena, which is what they needed. So, I mean, so SmackDown was obviously an improvement in terms of the ratings, and certainly huge improvement in terms of the production and the energy and the presentation. And Raw also did well in the ratings, at least by current standards. It drew a show-long average in excess of 2 million viewers for the first time since April 6, which was the night after WrestleMania, of course. So I think WWE will be reviewing this and saying, you know what, this was the right move for us, and people have responded favorably to it. Obviously, we don't know what they're going to do next week. Will the numbers hold up? I think they will probably drop a little bit, but I think they'll be above what they were prior to the implementation of the Thunderdome concept. So, I mean, as for NXT and AEW, I mean, they both, I think you'd probably say AEW was the winner there in terms of holding up on a Saturday evening. But NXT's numbers went up slightly as well. And AEW maintained most of its audience on the Saturday night, didn't it? So I think everyone's really done well out of this.
I think it was like you say, wins all round. And I think for NXT doing, you know, 853,000 viewers is still a good number. I thought personally they would crack over 900, but you know, they still did well. AEW, I think the week before on the Wednesday they had 792,000, and then it was down to 755.
Yeah.
I know PW Insider have actually reported this morning or late last night that Warner Media were very happy that most of the audience, you know, was retained, which you would be, because I mean, changing night, no matter how many times you tell people, it's, you know, you will get a drop off. So to retain most of your audience and still end up in the top five shows in cable that night is not a bad place to be.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think there's been a lot of talk out there of like, well, you know, if AEW was just broadcast on Wednesday night with no competition, would it be drawing 1.3 or 1.4 or more, 1.6 million viewers per week? And it wouldn't be. I mean,
I think if it was on its own, it could do a million, but I don't think it would be doing 1.4, 1.5.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you've got a specific audience that will only watch AEW and will watch NXT. And there's two different audiences. And, you know, the whole NXT thing, as we've discussed many times before, is that I think some people probably just watch it on the network rather than on TV. So, I mean, I think WWE and USA are happy with those numbers that it's drawing, because it can be viewed on the network as well. So,
it's worth noting that the NXT doesn't go up on the network for 8 days.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But to your point, I mean, look, they're going to be happy. If you can do a show, I assume if USA can do a show, which is an original show that I don't think they had to pay huge money for compared to what they pay for Raw, and they're getting, you know, between 650 and 900,000 viewers a week, they're doing okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a very fair point about NXT going up on the network 8 days later. I think the numbers that it draws, I'm sure they would like them to be higher, but I think for the distant third WWE brand that is obviously the developmental, as we saw with Keith Lee, you know, he migrated to Raw on Monday after losing the NXT title to Karrion Kross at TakeOver. Yeah, as a distant third brand, I think they're happy with those numbers.
I did want to very briefly just bring up, before we talk about the big weekend of wrestling from WWE, on Saturday night on Dynamite, Brody Lee essentially squashed Cody to win the TNT title. And I know we've said it, and I've seen it said a lot of places that, you know, how they kind of, how Brodie Lee's been presented after the Moxley loss has been pretty subpar, not been that interesting. What do you think of him kind of having this big squash victory over Cody? Is this something that you think can elevate him? Was this the right move to sort of give him a jolt? And do you think he was the right guy for to take the belt from Cody?
I mean, I'm not a fan of the Dark Order. I just don't think they've got star power. Brodie Lee as their leader is not inspiring to me. He's been chosen as the person to defeat Cody, and good for him. I think this is a response to probably complaints about the booking and how they haven't presented these ex-WWE and Impact guys as, you know, intimidating forces to be reckoned with who are better than the AEW originals. So, I mean, I think the Brodie Lee victory was a response to that. And it's like, right, if we do this, no one can complain about this thing that we've been accused of and obviously have been doing for many months. So, I mean, I don't know. It's up to Brodie Lee, really. It's up to the audience as to how this develops. It's hard for me to get excited about it because I just don't see really any value in the Dark Order. I just don't think there's any depth to this character, to this gimmick, to this faction. I just don't think Brodie Lee is really connected. It's hard to know whether it's a desperation tactic or whether it's the dawn of a new era for the Dark Order. Obviously, AEW would like it to be the latter. It seems to me to be something of like, right, a last-ditch attempt to try and make a success out of a character whose push they had absolutely bungled. I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to get excited about it because I just don't see this faction being anything that's ever really going to be anything more than it already is. We've got a lot of people right now who are, you know, we've got the Retribution gang in WWE, we've got the Ninjas, and we've got the Dark Order. And all three acts kind of look slightly similar, the similarities between all three of them. And none of them are really that exciting to me. Maybe Retribution in WWE can be something that's, you know, seminal and look back upon as you know, a milestone in WWE's history. Probably won't be. But you've got to give these things a chance to develop. With the Dark Order, they've been around, I think, since the start of AEW, since the start of the Dynamite era. I think they've been around since then, haven't they?
I think they debuted at All Out Weekend last year.
Okay.
In Chicago.
So, I mean, we're talking nearly a year, and to me, they've never really got over. They've never really interested me on any real level. I mean, when Brodie Lee first came in, you're thinking, well, what are they going to do with this character? Is it a Vince McMahon ripoff? You know, is he supposed to be like, doesn't he present himself as more like a cult leader rather than I think he's tried to distance himself from those Vince McMahon comparisons. I think he has publicly stated that, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, he's trying to come across now as this, a different type of character who's the leader of this cult that is, you know, a menace or a threat to everything that AEW holds dear. But it just doesn't, none of the people, none of the members of the Dark Order really come across as stars to me. And I can't see how any of them will. That's the other thing about them. Is there's a lot of guys in there that just feel like indie guys. They don't feel like stars or stars in the making. So I'm not excited by it, Kenny. What's your opinion on this development?
I think it is, you know, as a response, like you were saying, I think it's a ballsy move, and I appreciate a ballsy move. I think it's what they do with it now. I'm with you. The Dark Order have not really been for me. When they attacked all the top babyfaces in December, I mean, that was just one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. But, you know, they realized that, and they did kind of go back to square one. I think the issue with the Dark Order is that on BTE, on Being the Elite, Brodie Lee's supposed to be quite funny and quite, you know, charming, charismatic. But we don't see that in Dynamite. And if I don't see it in Dynamite, how am I supposed to know it's there?
Yeah.
And then before Brodie Lee was announced as the Exalted One, I actually thought the Dark Order were getting better. You know, they were doing the vignettes, and there was the guy doing the kind of, you know, preachy TV commercial thing. I thought that was really good. And I thought they were starting to build a little bit of momentum. But then when Brody became the Exalted One, he lost the title shot straight away. They've just kind of floundered ever since. And I don't really, for me anyway, like number five, number seven, number nine just isn't something that's that exciting to me. So I think that they need a couple more names. You know, they've been, why is Colt Cabana not been fully recruited now? You know, what's that seems to be like a very kind of, you know, trudging along at a very slow pace thing. But I think having him do something big like this is a good move and see what he can do with it. Because the even though Cody's TNT Open Challenge hasn't been as exciting as I think people thought it was going to be. I think people thought it was going to be, you know, kind of the John Cena 2015 Open Challenge, which it didn't really get to that level. But
well, which
people do fondly remember, Finn. I know you hate
it. Let's not get into the scene.
So I think taking the belt off Cody, are people going to be more interested now with Brody Lee having the belt? Who's going to be challenging him all out? Is it going to be Cody? There's questions, so it's just the hope that they follow up with something good on TV.
I mean, given the characters in the Dark Order numbers, it almost kind of reminds you of the villains from Austin Powers, doesn't it? You know, it's like this parody of a heel group. It doesn't exactly strike terror into your heart. And that's the thing, there's just no threat or menace, you know, projected or emanating from the Dark Order.
At least when the Undertaker had his ministry, you know, you were scared that Viscera might sit on you or Midian might talk to you.
That's it. Or Midian might take his clothes off. No, that was much later.
God, we're approaching that period soon.
So, I mean, I think if the Dark Order were to recruit some genuine stars or people who could be stars, who were presented as absolute killers, then I think they might get somewhere. But some of the guys are like, they just look so, they're like small and weedy and just not threatening. And they just come across as like indie, sort of interchangeable indie, I'm not going to say jobbers, but like indie guys who have been promoted above their station. I mean, it's been there a long time now as this act, and I feel like it should have made more progress than it has and be more of a force than it is. I don't think this TNT Championship is going to make any difference. You know, maybe I'm wrong. You know, if I am, Kenny, I'll be the first to admit it. And you will be the first to point out, and then I will be the one who will have to admit it.
That's how it works. Thing is, we're happy to be wrong. Somebody proves us wrong. It's great. Anyway, so let's move on to the big weekend of wrestling that we had. We kicked off with SmackDown on Friday night, which was the first night of the Thunderdome. They kicked it off with The Fiend and Vince McMahon having a stare down before Braun Strowman came out and Vince got out of Dodge. What did you make just overall of SmackDown and the first impressions of the Thunderdome?
Yeah, I thought it looked tremendous with the lasers and the LED boards and the pyro and the big arena setting and the lighting, and I mean, it just looked big time, and that has, you know, that's been the omission from WWE's on-screen presentations, as I've already stated, since March, and this rectified that, I think, in a very huge way. So I think it's a really good alternative to having fans in the venue, is that you've got them there on the screens. It's not the same. You know, it doesn't replicate the live audience experience because the sound is different. It's somewhat almost like this sort of buzz. It almost at times kind of feels canned, like piped in, the noise. So it's obviously different from when crowds are there. But I think it's the closest they're going to get to creating a, you know, live audience experience. And obviously, you know, it's very safe as well. It's obviously perfectly safe for all the people watching. So they cannot be criticized for a moment for, you know, rushing people back or anything like that. So, I mean, I thought it looked tremendous. I was really impressed. And you can see a lot of thought had gone into it. Tremendous expense had gone into it as well, which is nice to see WWE spending some of that money on its presentation, on its production, on its show. You know, it can afford it. We know it's making enough damn money. It can do whatever it wants. It can afford pretty much anything. So I was impressed. What did you think, Kenny?
Yeah, it looked great. It looked so good. It felt, like you said earlier in the show, it felt like finally WWE was back, where we're now seeing what we had seen before. We did get a little bit of a bait and switch at the beginning with Vince and The Fiend, but, you know, and that was just designed to get people talking.
what about Vince no-selling The Fiend?
I mean, maybe he was just taking Shawn Michaels' no-sell on the punt kick approach. Maybe
that. No, no, I'm not having that. I watched that again. There's all the people talking about that. And I went back and watched it. And I was thinking, what are people talking about? And he got up. He had to get out of the way. He got to the corner. He looked so disorientated. And I'm not having that. I thought that was a really good sell job there. I mean, I thought...
God forbid, Finn, that I have a wee joke here in the podcast. God forbid.
Well, that was like the mood out there. Velvet Sky, of all people. Velvet Sky was responding to it. And she's there telling Shawn Michaels off for his poor selling. Schooling Shawn Michaels on selling. I mean, I'll never say that I've seen it all because you, no, it doesn't matter how long you live and how many decades you spend covering pro wrestling, you'll never see it all. There'll always be something to surprise you. And my God.
And this week is Velvet. Well, because we had talked about the punt kick on Raw last week. And then we'd done the podcast. And it was only after we'd done the podcast where I started seeing people talk about it. I was going, I should watch it back. Because surely we can't have missed that. And then I watched it. I was like, no, he was selling. I think he just sold in a different way, which is, you're supposed to be unique.
Absolutely. To me, it was a huge realism to it. And it was just like, okay, so he got up, but he was in the corner. He wasn't moving. And he was still in the corner when that show went off the air. And he had to get out of the way because we had Drew running in and Randy Orton was fleeing and all these. He had to get out of the way. He couldn't just lie there in the ring. But to me, it was like, I thought it was very realistic. That was terrible. John Cena would have sold it better. It's like, sure.
I do love the idea that Velvet Sky is telling Shawn Michaels how to sell. It's great.
Yeah,
anyway, so on SmackDown, we had a lot of build towards the Strowman and Fiend match, which I guess we'll talk about that when we talk about the SummerSlam match. Let's just talk about that on one go because it's all the same story. But on SmackDown, stuff that we didn't have involving the pay-per-view, we had Big E getting a win over Sheamus, which... decent enough match, but I guess the bigger story is Big E was on Talking Smack after the show with The Miz. Did you get a chance to see this, Finn, and Big E sort of responding to allegations that he's not serious enough? He talked about Kofi as well. What did you make of his comments?
To be honest with you, Kenny, I'm going to write about that in the magazine, if that's all right.
This is where it started, everybody. Now it's going to be... I've done that comment under that.
I watched it with some fascination. I'll just say here, there was genuine tension between Miz and Big E. And I was thinking, wow, what's going on here? And Big E, it was quite funny, really, because I'm not going to change my character. You know, I'll get over based on my talent. I'm not changing for anyone. And what was interesting was that Miz was saying, no, you need to be more serious, Big E, if you want to ascend into a contention for a Universal title shot. And then once Miz started calling him out on the character, and Big E also was saying that Kofi Kingston had been wronged by the company in the way that he was never pushed as a singles performer after his title run ended at the hands of Brock Lesnar last October, was hugely disrespectful to Kofi. And you could tell that Big E was furious about this. And then Miz is kind of saying, well, hold on a minute. No, you need to do this. And maybe Kofi should have done this. And Big E then got really serious. So Miz, I don't know whether this is inadvertent or deliberate, but Miz actually brought out of Big E and what he was seeking. Big E ended up being deadly serious on that program. So I was fascinated by it.
Yeah, it just shows the Miz is a great guy to have around. And if you've not seen it, I would really recommend going on the network and going and watching the full Big E Miz Talking Smack segment, because you have Big E coming in being Big E, and then you have The Miz saying stuff to him, and then they start having this really interesting conversation about, you know, basically Miz is saying, you know, don't be Kofi. Don't make Kofi's mistakes, because you know what's going to happen. And then, you know, and then Big E sort of brings it back to Miz, and you know, Miz is saying, I was just like Kofi, and Big E's saying, did you have to wait 11 years for a title shot? Is that what happened to you? And then Miz is like, you know, I wasn't even supposed to be doing this show today. They said they needed someone and I can do everything. And it goes on, but it's really fascinating stuff. So it's worth checking out. But Big E did get a win on SmackDown over Sheamus. But do you know what happened on SmackDown? I've actually been ahead of the curve for about 3 years now, which most people are not have not caught up with me, is I knew 3 years ago that Kalisto was a heel.
You did.
He vanity searches himself. He blocks everybody and their mother. Can't take a bit of criticism. But it wasn't, it was a joke. But anyway, he now is kind of turning heel because Nakamura and Cesaro beat Lince Dorado and Gran Metalik. So he's very upset that they lost Pot Kettle. But what did you make of the slow burn, I suppose, heel turn of Kalisto?
Well, it's slow burn to you. This came from out of nowhere to everyone else. I mean, it was just like Metalik and Dorado lost to Cesaro and Nakamura. Very disappointing match. Kind of a bit clumsy, a bit scrappy. You know, unless you're watching the Iconics, you never see clumsiness like this in WWE matches. They're normally so smooth and so fluid. And this kind of seemed a bit laboured at times. And then after Metalik and Dorado lost, there's a big bust up between them in the ring. It's like, it kind of seemed like it came from out of nowhere to me. I mean, I know you've identified years ago that Kalisto's a proper villain, a wrong'un, a scoundrel, a rapscallion. You had his card marked years ago, Kenny, as you've already pointed out. But this kind of came from out of nowhere. I think it's actually quite interesting because, you know, Lucha House Party were going nowhere. After they lost this match, they couldn't seriously then pit them against Cesaro and Nakamura again. So they really did need to do something different with this act. So at least it's progression for them. It's not same old, same old. As for who Cesaro and Nakamura wrestle next, are there any other tag teams on SmackDown apart from Morrison and The Miz? I don't think there are.
I think they've exhausted the SmackDown tag team division. They need to move to Raw. And
so, I mean, almost like, you know, harking back to what we were talking about last week, just get rid of these tag team titles. Oh, you know, you were saying, no, we need one. I was saying, no, let's not get rid of it. You were saying, no, we need one tag team title. And I think we do. Just unify these belts with the Raw tag team title and, you know, have the champions be floating champions who go across the three brands. I think that would be better than what we have right now, which is utterly worthless SmackDown tag team, an utterly worthless SmackDown tag team championship.
Couldn't agree more. But the main event match of SmackDown was AJ Styles defending the Intercontinental title against Jeff Hardy. They had this kind of 11-minute match, and Jeff Hardy won the title, defeated AJ Styles. What did you make of the match, and were you shocked to see them change the title?
No, I wasn't, and I'm glad they have, because Jeff Hardy needed a reward. He should have been rewarded for what he was subjected to by this company in the feud with Sheamus. And we as viewers kind of needed a reward as well for what we were subjected to in the Hardy versus Sheamus feud. So, I mean, I think it was the right outcome for Hardy. You could say it was kind of rushed, and that is a fair criticism of the outcome here on SmackDown. But I mean, Hardy needed something. He needed, after the win over Sheamus, he then needed to be, you know, an upward trajectory, and pitting him against Styles, I think, was the right decision. Giving him the title as well, I think, was the right decision. Maybe it was premature, but, you know, if it hadn't happened here, it would have happened a few weeks later. And I think this feud will continue after this, and maybe the title will change hands again in this feud. But great to see Hardy, you know, on the winning end and winning the title again. And he expressed his gratitude as well to WWE on that same episode of Talking Smack that Big E appeared on. And he seemed quite genuine to me, you know, in his sentiments that he expressed on that show. Did you see Hardy's appearance on Talking Smack? You must have watched it as well.
Yeah. I thought he came across really well. And like you say, after what he's put up with, he deserved this for sure.
You know, and afterwards, you know, AJ Styles was yelling at Parky, you know, backstage. So that was really funny as well. And I mean, I'm interested to see how, where that goes. I'm hoping that's not the end of the Parks character, because, you know, he is amusing. I don't know whether working with Styles is the right, I don't know whether that's the right match, because Parks is more of a comedy character. But I mean, I guess there is some comedy elements to Styles, and he's fine with that now. He's been around long enough now. He's coming up, what is it, 4.5 years he's been there now. So I mean, Styles can do comedy. That's fine. It's not going to do him any harm at all, I don't think, in the long run.
So, I mean, that was really... The other stuff from SmackDown that we'll go into is obviously the stuff relating to Strowman and The Fiend, which we can leave for SummerSlam. Was there anything else on SmackDown that caught your fancy before we move on to the biggest party of the summer that you didn't see coming?
Well, yeah, there was a beat-the-clock challenge between Naomi and Sasha Banks, and then Naomi and Bayley, and the stipulation was whoever beat Naomi the quickest would defend their title against Asuka last at SummerSlam. Hope I've explained that logically. So it was Naomi versus Sasha Banks at first. Banks won that match with a bank statement in 3 minutes and 39 seconds. And then it was Bayley versus Naomi. And Naomi ended up pinning Bayley in 1 minute and 44 seconds. So that meant that Bayley then had to defend her title first against Asuka at SummerSlam because she lost to Naomi on SmackDown. And of course, Banks defeated Naomi. And yeah, I mean, this was, again, you know, there's been this case made in the past for Naomi receiving a bigger push than she's been allocated by WWE. And there was no evidence whatsoever in either of these matches that Naomi deserves any more than she is receiving from WWE. I mean, she's against Banks, who's like obviously really good. The match was like awkward, hesitation. It's not natural. I mean, Naomi's selling's just all over the place. She's been doing this for like 10 years. And she just looks to me like somebody who's been doing it for 6 months. And seeing her defeat Bayley in 1 minute and 44 seconds after like one feeble rear view, I just thought was like, what is this? I mean, what was Bayley? I mean, I understand why she did the job, but to do the job in 1 minute and 44 seconds to Naomi, after Naomi had been beaten by Sasha Banks, I mean, in a sense, it doesn't matter because Bayley's established now, but I don't know. You could argue it doesn't matter because Bayley was, you know, double champ and like she can take the loss, and yeah, she can, but it still felt to me like Bayley was devalued by this defeat to Naomi in 1 minute and 44 seconds. So yeah, I objected to that. That was something that was to me the worst thing on the show, apart from Vince not selling for The Fiend. Was the absolute worst thing on the show just before his 75th birthday.
Well, let's move on to SummerSlam, the big show of the weekend. On the kickoff show, we saw Apollo Crews beat MVP to retain the US title. Did you get a chance to see this match on the kickoff show?
I did not, but I heard it was pretty good.
It was fine. It was fine. It's not something that I would say, let's pause the recording and go and watch it. It's not one of those situations. But we kick off the show, the Thunderdome looks great, the pyro just, you know, you could cry with happiness at the pyro. And we kick off, as you mentioned, because Bayley, Sasha was able to beat Naomi and Bayley wasn't, so Bayley ended up having to defend the title first, defend her SmackDown title against Asuka in the opening match. And with an assist from Sasha Banks, Bayley was able to retain, which obviously kept the story of Asuka's attempt at winning the title going. How did they do as an opener?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I really like the body language at ringside from Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley looked really concerned before the match. You know, Sasha's at ringside. She's selling the threat posed by Asuka. And I think you can't really underestimate all these little things that they do. You know, this is in many ways more important than what goes on in the ring. I mean, that to me is, you know, the hallmarks of a star, someone who does all these little things and without even really, and doing it sort of, it doesn't even seem like they're doing it consciously. It just seems like when they're out there, they are those characters, and the Asuka is that dangerous. So I thought it was a high powered performance, very well done. You know, Asuka kicked out of the Bayley to belly, you know, she looked really strong. Asuka ended up crashing into Banks on the ring apron, and then Bayley smartly pinned Asuka with, I think it was an inside cradle. So, I mean, Asuka was protected on the finish as well, as she should have been. Bayley scored the win, which intensified the pressure on Banks in the match later on the pay-per-view. After the match, Sasha Banks ended up pounding Asuka to try and get the advantage for the match later on the event. So I thought it was an A1 start to the show, Kenny.
Yeah, it was a decent opener. Got the pace of the show going. That then took us into the Street Profits against Andrade and Angel Garza for the Raw Tag Team.
Hold on, Kenny, you missed a very important part. The Hyundai car advert, voiced by and featuring Roman Reigns.
Well, that was like a foreshadowing that was what we were going to get later on the show.
I mean, they said we'd never see it coming. After that, I saw it coming. Mind you, in saying that, I did watch SummerSlam actually the day after the event, so I was already aware that Roman Reigns had returned.
Captain Hindsight strikes again. So we got the Street Profits against Angel Garza and Andrade for the Raw Tag Team titles. And I'd said to Sondra when we were reviewing it on Patreon that I thought this was the weakest match in the show. And I just didn't really get going. It was fine, but it just kind of felt like a Raw match to me.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, it was totally forgettable. Ford ended up pinning Garza. Garza had attempted to make the tag out to Andrade just before the finish, but Andrade was at ringside checking on Zelina Vega, who had fallen off the ring apron, been knocked off the ring apron rather, and fallen to ringside. So they kind of had the excuse for the finish, and it did keep the story going of tension between Andrade and Garza. But it didn't feel like, I mean, this is SummerSlam, you know, the number three event of the year. This did not feel like a SummerSlam tag team title match, did it?
It didn't, and that's another, you know, you mentioned earlier, that's maybe another reason if we do unify these tag titles, we can have one tag title match that maybe feels bigger.
Yeah, I mean, Cesaro and Nakamura, I mean, they don't have anyone to defend the title against, so they weren't even on the show. So, I mean, this was the only tag team title, the only tag team title match on the show, because obviously Bayley and Banks didn't defend their tag team title. It felt like it just didn't matter. It felt like it might as well have been a 24/7 title match for the amount of impression that it left on me and you, apparently. I'm sure many other people watching this event. So yeah, very disappointing.
Luckily, it was really the only disappointing match on the show. Everything else was at least good, or you know, you felt satisfied by it. So I'll take 1 out of 7, if that's the quota. The next match in the show was Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, which went from being loser shaved bald. I feel like you put a call in, Finn. You were like, look, Kenny was fucking rubbing it in.
Yeah.
He was right. Can we just can this stipulation do something else and I'll retain some dignity? So they
basically, I was right all along, wasn't I, Kenny?
You were. I have to give you your credit. So Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville was turned into a no DQ loser leaves WWE match. And, you know, they got 10 minutes. They worked hard. Mandy got the win, and we saw Otis come out and celebrate with Mandy. Sonya, you know, maybe taking some time after the kind of horrible real life thing that happened to her last week.
Yeah,
you know, what did you think of their effort, and was it a worthy kind of SummerSlam match for them? What did you think?
I mean, Mandy was out there in a serious outfit, which seemed to be annoying her throughout the match. She took ages setting up a table at ringside. I was like, I really felt for her there. I mean, Sonya was one thing also. I mean, this is not something that we normally talk about, but Sonya was really putting the boot into Mandy's chest. At one point, hit her with this running knee. And I never, because obviously, I believe Mandy's got implants. It looks like looks to me like she has.
She does.
And it's like, I never like seeing women with implants taking shots to the chest, because the amount of times that implants have broken in matches, it's like, why are they doing that? They don't need to do that. And they showed the running knee on replay. It looked like she really nailed it. So I didn't really like seeing that, but hopefully everything's still intact. I think we would have heard by now if it wasn't. There was a little bit of talking to each other on the outside as well. I don't like bringing that up, but I used to nail Cena for this. So, I mean, you know, you've got to be consistent in your criticism of calling spots. I thought it was almost like it kind of, I was having flashbacks to Sammy Guevara and Matt Hardy when they did the spot where, it was Mandy sliding chairs at Sonya's head, wasn't it? She's sliding chairs down the table in the direction of Sonya's head. Right. Obviously, this was pre-planned and they knew what they were doing, unlike Sammy Guevara and Matt Hardy. And no one was injured as well, happily. But I think it did pick up towards the end. Rose won you know, she won with, she ended up scoring the pin. I mean, that was not a surprise. I mean, this was the most predictable outcome on the card, I think. And then Otis came out and celebrated with Mandy. I would have liked them to have a better match than they did. I don't think it went as well as they had expected or planned. It kind of felt a little bit laboured at times. So I was hoping for more for these two. So I was, mildly disappointed by this one as well. But not as disappointed as I was by the Profits and Andrade and Garza.
Yeah, I thought they did fine. I just think it wasn't as classic as I think we'd hoped it would be, but I thought they did a decent effort.
It just didn't click like you wanted. You know, you were willing them on. You wanted them to really click and really have that, you know, dazzling match. You know, that fireball of a match, and it just didn't quite measure up to those standards, sadly.
Now, before we talk about the next match with Dominic Mysterio against Seth Rollins, early in the show, we actually saw the Mysterio family arrive. And we saw Ray, Dominic, and Ray's wife, Angie, who was wearing a Louis Vuitton blouse. Have you seen any Louis Vuitton blouses in any of the high street shops in Lancaster? Is that something that you think that is coming back into vogue? It was quite a statement here from Angie Mysterio.
Well, the streets of Lancaster, I'm not really sure how many people wear Louis Vuitton in the streets of Lancaster. I don't think many shops sell it. I'm sure on the Style Mile, they sell it there. Or maybe they did, you know, 20 years ago. But yeah, it was quite a statement. It was quite a statement. You're right.
But, you know, and then Dominic said, you know, I don't want you to get involved, which, you know, like, your dad's coming to the ring with you. He's going to get involved.
Yeah.
But, you know, so they have a nice little family moment. Angie looks kind of uncomfortable to be there. Then we got the Dominic versus Seth Rollins match, the street fight. They actually ended up going over 20 minutes. Rollins got the win in the end as Ray had to watch his son while he was handcuffed, had to watch his son be curb stomped and pinned. How do you think Dominic did? And talk me through your thoughts on the match.
I thought they were out there too long. You know, I don't really have any complaints about Dominic's performance. I thought he did really well. Actually, I was just thinking about Angie coming out at the end, which is the reason why I use the word she. It's just like, that wasn't really needed at the end. I thought there was maybe too many elements to this match. It was like, right, we need to add this, we need to add this, we need to add this. It's like, no, you don't really. You don't need to add any more elements to it. With Ray at ringside and Murphy at ringside, I thought that was sufficient. I guess they brought Angie in and she then had to play a part in the match as well. I mean, Byron said that Dominic had been training for years and I think he's going to be really good. I mean, there's a lot of things he does really well. And I thought it was a really a triumph performance by him to go as long as he did. In this setting, in a match of this magnitude, I know they had obviously lots of extras and too many extras actually, and they had a lot of help. And obviously, they had the street fight concept as well. Wasn't it a bit bizarre, Kenny, that they ended up having a no DQ loser leaves WWE match, and then in the very next match, it was a street fight? You would have thought they would have spread them out a bit, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would have. I assume that maybe they had this order planned out when it was hair versus hair. And yeah. They just didn't think, they didn't realise to change it.
I don't know why they didn't change that. So that perplexed me slightly. We should mention that Seth Rollins came out in similar attire to what Rey Mysterio wore at Halloween Havoc 1998 in his famous match with Eddie Guerrero. That was noted on commentary. Dominic's outfit had a hood on it that was really irritating him. You know, why don't these wrestlers try out the outfits before they wear them in big matches? That was really annoying him. It was kind of clunky at times, but they really went for it with the kendo sticks. I kind of felt like they got that in the wrong order on the match layout, in that Seth Rollins should have nailed Dominic with the cane first, and then Dominic should have had his revenge and nailed Rollins second. That should have been reversed in the psychology to me, in the babyface heel psychology. Is that the heel does the beating first, then the babyface does it second to get revenge. So, I mean, you guess you could say, well, Dom was getting revenge for the beatdown on Raw, and I guess he was, but I just think of the context you know, the self-contained match, it should have been the other way around. I mean, Rollins was really badly marked up, as was Dominic. Murphy, you know, he shoved a table into the ring. You know, Rollins was yelling at Ray at ringside. Dominic hit this really good Russian leg sweep with the candlestick off the ropes to a table, followed by a frog splash. I thought that was a really good combination of moves. Some serious finesse on that. I thought there was nothing clunky at all about those moves, and that was a believable near fall. So I thought Dominic did a really good, in a sense, of convincing us that he might win. Because, I mean, most of us thought, didn't we, that Rollins was going to win, because Dominic couldn't be a star of the magnitude of Seth Rollins in his first match. So we all knew that Rollins was going to win, but I thought Dominic did create an element of doubt over what the outcome would be by, you know, the energy that he infused his performance with. So Rollins ended up hitting a power bomb and a kendo stick bombardment. Then Angie's out on the stage.
Come on, Angie.
Then Ray goes up there and starts having a conversation with her. And meanwhile, Murphy's trying to like ram Dom's eye into the ring steps. He's like, Angie, you know, what are you doing? And then Ray makes the save, so that was good. Then the handcuffs came out and Ray was handcuffed. Other things happened as well. And in the end, Rollins hit the curb stomp on Dominic for the pin as Mysterio was watching. So yeah, I felt like they did too much. There was too much going on, but I can't fault the performances. I think it absolutely did deliver. Probably they gave us too much. That would be my only criticism. And you can't really blame the talent for that. That's more down to whoever put this thing together. What did you think, Kenny?
I thought they nailed it. I thought they did really well. They were probably there a little bit too long, but I mean, in terms of this being Dominic Mysterio's first match, like, I'm watching people on Retro who've never been this good. So this is, he's doing really well for this being his first match. And I thought he looked really good. So I think he's a really good kind of underdog babyface. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with him next.
Yeah, I think it's been great that he hasn't been rushed into this debut either, and that they've been training for a long time. And you know, the temptation sometimes with the second generation performers, get him in the ring ASAP, and they haven't rushed this. And he was ready for this. So I mean, yeah, full marks to Dom for his performance on the night.
And also one thing that, you know, AEW have a lot of, that WWE don't really have a lot of, is young guys on the main roster. You know, AEW, you've got like Sammy Guevara, the Jungle Boy, and all that. Because you want young girls to have a crush on the show as well. Dominic Mysterio, at least it's now somebody, I think he's, 21, 22? He's pretty young. But it's just, it's good to have somebody young on the show. Good to have a different kind of performer on the show. So it's good for diversity as well. Then we got Sasha taking on Asuka for the Raw Women's title. And Bayley did attempt to help Sasha, but it did backfire, which caused Asuka to win the Raw Women's Championship, with Sasha just kind of really deflated. Bayley's trying to explain herself and kept the story going. What did you make of it?
I didn't think it was as good as the Bayley versus Asuka match, but it was still a good match. That sunset flip powerbomb that Banks did on Asuka off the apron onto the ringside mats looked really nasty, didn't it? When Asuka smacking the back of her head on the ringside mats, they showed that on replay, and hopefully Asuka was all right. I assume she was, because she was obviously on Raw the following evening, but that could have been bad. At the end, we kind of had a similar situation with Bayley trying to interfere, but then she sort of didn't. She moved out of the way so she wouldn't sacrifice herself for Sasha in the way that Sasha had done in the Bayley versus Asuka match. Although she did take, like, I think it was an elbow from Asuka. And then Asuka ends up applying the Asuka lock after several attempts, and wins by tap out, and Banks and Bayley are devastated afterwards. I thought it was the right outcome. Asuka had to win one of these matches and win the championship in one of these matches. And the Banks and Bayley feud needed this development as well, because they've been getting on too well. So I think it's now time to start heading in the direction of Splitsville. So I thought everything really, really was done in the correct manner, in the correct fashion, the correct time here. So overall, I was really pleased with it. Yeah, I was really pleased with the way the story played out. The match to me was kind of secondary to the story of Banks losing, because Bayley didn't do for her what Banks had done for Bayley. So that was really the what lingered. You know, that's the message that you really took from this, that the story of Bayley and Banks is heading in the direction that we've all been expecting it to go in for many months now. And I think the time is right for that. So yeah, really, really, really pleased with the way it all played out.
And then that led us to Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. It felt like a big match, given all the stuff that was leading up to it. And the interesting sort of wrinkle to the story was the whole idea was, you know, you're never going to see it coming, the Claymore kick versus the RKO, and neither of them got to do their finisher. And in the end, when Orton went for the RKO, Drew countered it with a backslide for the three count. You never saw it coming. Drew retains. Interesting way to finish it, with not having either of the finishers used in the match. Did that work for you, and did it make you want to see the feud continue?
I mean, I would have preferred it if McIntyre had lost the title. I mean, I wanted to see Orton win the championship here. To me, that would have been, obviously that's not going to happen at Payback, because it's going to be Orton versus Keith Lee. So maybe there will still be an Orton versus McIntyre rematch for the title.
I assume they're going to face off at the, I'm trying to see what the next pay-per-view is after Payback. The one after Payback is going to be, oh well, no idea. There's a pay-per-view at the end of September. And I assume it's going to be that one they're going to face off.
Yeah, I mean, I think Orton has done so well in so many, you know, with the character work. I haven't really been that. I mean, some of his matches have lasted too long, but again, that's not his fault. I think you can't fault his performances in these matches that he's had this year. I mean, so many people are putting him over and complimenting him on the way in which he stepped up. And I think he has. I don't think that's just hype. I don't think that's just people who are biased towards WWE putting Orton over. I think he really has had he's had his best year in, I don't know how long, but in many years. And I think, like Jeff Hardy, for tolerating the Sheamus thing, for enduring the Sheamus thing, I think Orton should be rewarded for the improvements and the changes and the advancements that he has made with another title run. So I think I would have liked to seen him win the belt here, but as long as he wins it at the end of September, I'm fine. You know, it can wait until then. Orton kicked out of the Future Shock DDT, and you're right, we're all watching it thinking it's going to be the Claymore, it's going to be the RKO, and instead McIntyre, I think he ducked an RKO attempt and then used an old school backslide for the pin, which was the same move that Kerry Von Erich used to defeat Ric Flair for the NWA world title back in 1984. Did you know that, Kenny?
I did not, and I assume I would probably hedge a bet that that was like a little homage for the people who got that little Easter egg.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I really like them doing different things like that. I mean, you know, occasionally many times wrestling becomes too predictable. And it was really interesting to see them, as you say, include this wrinkle here where they deviated from what we all expected. We never saw that coming, and McIntyre ended up retaining by a pin with the backslide. I mean, it was a good match. Didn't give me the outcome that I was seeking, but it could still happen yet, Kenny.
You never know. I mean, I will say just, I actually think it was a good thing that Drew won here and won the way that he did, because I think it furthers the story. And all the stuff they did on Raw afterwards, I thought really added to it, and I'm more invested in it. And I think because going into it, we all thought Orton might win, that gave it another layer of kind of, drama to the match. Because, you know, as you know, for me especially as a Scotsman, you're hoping that Drew's going to be able to win it, but you think Orton's going to win it. So I thought they did a really good job of kind of building it up, and you know, we'll talk about what they did in Raw, but I thought they really followed up well on Raw as well. So I'm really digging the story. I think Orton and Drew, it feels like a world title program, for sure.
It does, yeah, it does. I mean, we've got a little detour at Payback, but I think, yeah, they'll be probably back on track again in the run-up to the September pay-per-view, and maybe that'll be Orton's time.
Which leads us to the main event. So they built it up on SmackDown because The Fiend was confronting Vince McMahon, and then Braun Strowman came out, and then they had a whole, you know, angle throughout the show. And in the end, Braun Strowman attacked Funhouse Bray in his funhouse, and he ended up throwing him off a ledge in the arena. And then Bray was getting taken away in an ambulance, but the ambulance doors opened and it was The Fiend, which all led us to this Falls Count Anywhere match for the Universal title, Braun Strowman and The Fiend. I don't think I'm you know, giving any trade secrets away here or anything, but I don't think Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt have great chemistry together in the ring.
No, I don't think they do.
Do you think the Falls Count Anywhere thing, did that make the match any more interesting than if it had been a standard regular title match?
I think it did, yeah. I think by allowing them all these, you know, all this latitude to do other things, I think that was helpful to the match. I mean, I'm not sure if I really want to sit through a straight match between The Fiend and Braun Strowman. I mean, we saw Strowman versus Wyatt. Was it Money in the Bank? They had the match there, didn't they? And then obviously they had the Swamp fight, which, you know, was more of a like a cinematic match. And no cinematic matches on this show, Kenny. We should just point that out.
Yeah, and I think it was good because you know, the cinematic matches haven't been hitting as much as they were at the beginning. But the cinematic theme was the Thunderdome. That was the cinematic thing on this show.
It's not necessary anymore, is it really? They don't need to do that because we've got that energy and we've got that atmosphere, or at least something akin to what we had before fans were banned from attending events.
Exactly.
So I enjoyed the match. I thought I wouldn't have liked to have seen a straight match between these two, and I think these two needed the help because, I mean, Strowman, I was really pleased to see Strowman lose the title. Obviously, he was a last-minute replacement for Roman. He should never really become champion, and he stepped in when they needed him, and it's probably will be good for him in the long run, but I don't really feel like he's been a success as champ. And I was pleased to see him lose the belt here to The Fiend. The finish was remarkably clean, wasn't it?
It was. It was kind of out of nowhere a little bit because, I mean, Braun Strowman's stupidest babyface in the world, gets a toolbox out and then starts using a box cutter to cut parts of the ring open. Like an absolute idiot, because you knew that was going to be his downfall. And then The Fiend ended up just Sister Abigailing him a couple of times on the exposed boards and covering him. So Braun Strowman basically handed The Fiend a victory.
He did, yeah. He just made things worse for himself by making the ring more dangerous by removing the canvas and the padding, and then Fiend hit Uranagi, and then two Sister Abigails for what I've written here is the remarkably clean pinfall. Fiend wins the Universal title. So yeah, Strowman, it just felt like he was humbled here, I think is the word I would use. As you say, he ended up looking foolish because what he did ended up backfiring massively on him, and then The Fiend beat him fairly easily, really. So just felt like the end of Braun's main event career here. I know he's having the match of Payback with The Fiend and the guy we're going to be talking about in a moment, but it just feels like it's kind of over for Braun Strowman. And I'm not upset by that at all. Feel like they gave him a shot, and obviously the environment right now, it's difficult, but it's difficult for everyone, isn't it, Kenny?
It's difficult for everyone right now, but I mean, the thing is with Braun Strowman, they gave him the title far too late as to when he needed it. You know, he needed it 2 years ago.
Yeah, he did.
But the big story at the end of the show was after The Fiend had won the title, we get a spear out of nowhere. You never see it coming. It was Roman Reigns, big return. He's spearing Strowman, he's spearing The Fiend. He's taking them both out. He's holding the title up. A monumental return for Roman. Bit of an edge to him. Wreck everyone and leave on the t-shirt. You know, I think we were all kind of wondering why The Fiend and Strowman was going on last. And this was our answer. Big Roman Reigns return. What did you make of his return?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to go down a storm, didn't it, with the people on the screens in the Amway Center in Orlando, isn't it? That's the venue they're using.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns suddenly appeared, pummels The Fiend, blasts Braun Strowman at ringside with a chair, then hits another spear on The Fiend in the ring and holds up the Universal title belt. Some people thought it was a heel turn. Didn't resemble a heel turn to me. It was just Reigns coming back, clobbering everyone. You know, I'm in charge now. I'm the boss. I mean, that's kind of his character in the first place, wasn't it? That he was the man, you know, and everyone else looked up to him. So didn't feel like a heel turn to me at all. And that was very much the image that we were left with. Roman Reigns is back. That was the story of the show as far as WWE was concerned. Reigns holding up the belt, like this is what he's back for. And then they announced the following night on Raw that there's going to be a no-holds-barred triple threat match between Fiend, Reigns and Strowman at Payback. And he's on the Payback image, the poster, isn't he? He's on the image they're using to promote the show. Just yeah. Roman Reigns there looking mean. So we're, but not looking like a heel.
No, not. And I think people are getting too excited. But Reigns, Strowman, and Fiend is a big match. Overall, when that happened at the end, Roman returns. He's now back in the title picture. Was that a good ending for SummerSlam?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, we got the Fiend victory. He didn't run in prior to that, so that was the right way to arrange it. So we had the decisive Fiend victory. So he's the champion now. There's no funny business there, no skullduggery. Fiend won, and now Reigns is back, and he wants his title back. So I thought, it was laid out perfectly. And everyone was talking about Reigns the next day on social media, weren't they? And that night, the next day, I mean, it was, you know, a lot of it was based on Roman Reigns' new gnashes, his new veneers, his new teeth, of course. But Reigns was all over Twitter the next day, wasn't it?
He was everywhere. So, I thought overall a good SummerSlam.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was, I enjoyed it. Yeah, there was a couple of letdowns, but I mean, overall, it was a really good show under the circumstances. The new presentation, I thought, really enhanced it. And it lasted, I think it just lasted just over 3 hours. So it's not
3 hours and 5 minutes. Music to our ears.
Music to our ears. And I thought it delivered, pretty much delivered everything that it set out to, everything that it wished to do. I mean, the only thing, my only real complaint would be Orton not dethroning Drew McIntyre. But you know what? I'm willing to wait for that. That's coming, Kenny.
It is coming. Well, let's to finish off the main podcast here, let's talk about some of the stuff from Raw. We had an angle where Drew McIntyre came out at the beginning, cutting a very sort of like confident promo about how, you know, he beat Randy Orton and he was a little bit better than him. And, he was making fun of him for the greatest wrestling match ever. And he says, you know, if you want to face me again, that's fine, because I'll get to do the one thing I didn't get to at SummerSlam, kicking your head off and saying you to Claymore Country. And he's, you know, up on the ramp, holding the belt up, all happy. And then Orton attacks him, ends up punting him in the head twice. And McIntyre is just completely reeled from that. He is very, very dazed. And that leads us to a kind of show-long storyline of Randy Orton coming out later to respond and being interrupted by Keith Lee. And led us to a Keith Lee Orton match, which got interrupted by Drew McIntyre, who then got punted for a third time. So they really gave us a lot of story on this show with the Orton McIntyre and now Keith Lee thing. A lot to unpack there. And we're going to see Keith Lee and Randy Orton at Payback. What did you make of all the stuff they did on Raw? Was it a good debut for Keith Lee? Was it a good extension of the Orton and Drew McIntyre feud? What did you think?
I thought Drew came across a bit cocky in his promo celebration. When he was saying that, you know, he beat the winner of the greatest match of all time, so kind of made him the greatest wrestler of all time. He was almost asking for it there, and then he's standing on the ramp, you know, with his back to the gorilla position. It's like, come on, Drew, you should have been smarter than that. And then Orton beats him down, and they end up backstage, as you say, hit two punts, and McIntyre really sold it. Of course, you know, didn't sold it totally, because he didn't sell it in terms of not being able to come out later, because he came out later and ends up attacking Randy Orton. And then Randy Orton hits the third one. And I think it was Charlie Caruso who said that she somehow overheard the doctors talking about Drew's condition and that he had potentially suffered a fractured skull. I was thinking, how could they know that without an X-ray? Maybe they had an X-ray machine in the trainer's room, Kenny.
That's true. My favourite thing was when Charlie, after the third one, when Druid came out in the show, that she said, you know, we found out that he may have a career-threatening injury or possibly worse. I mean, she always said, he may die during the programme. We will keep you updated. That woman can sell anything.
Yeah, so yeah, Orton ended up, yeah, he attacked Drew another time, struck him with punt kick number three, and Drew was motionless after that one. So, I mean, that's going to be Drew's explanation for Drew not wrestling at Payback. So, I mean, that's fine. And then we've got Keith Lee versus Orton, and Keith Lee had explained that he was pals with Drew McIntyre. One thing I didn't really like about this was that we had the Orton-Keith Lee match, right? And then Drew McIntyre runs in, and then Orton flees, and then suddenly Keith Lee is nowhere to be found. We just see Drew in the ring. And I think it would have been nice, really, if Keith Lee had sort of said to Drew McIntyre, for setting things up in the future, if he'd just gone up to Drew and said, you know, what are you doing? You know, this is my debut match here, and you've just ruined it. And that would have been a really nice sort of detail plot point that could have been used for a future program between Drew and Keith Lee or whatever. Because, I mean, to me, Drew kind of works better. I know he's done well as the face, but to me, kind of character is kind of heelish. So I'm figuring he's probably going to turn at the end of the year or early next year. And I think McIntyre as a heel versus Keith Lee would be a really big program for both. So, I mean, this is a common thing in WWE, where people just vacate the ring. They just disappear, don't they? You think, where's that person who was in the ring seconds ago? They vanished. You know, has the Ultimate Warrior's trap door returned? Have they gone through that? So I didn't like that. And later on, Keith Lee did acknowledge that Drew had run in on his match and ruined his debut. But he understood why, because he was so angry about Orton attacking him. So that was fair enough. But I think something like that might have been a really good plot detail for future use. Thinking ahead here, Kenny. Planning ahead. You know, that's what I always do. But I mean, yeah, overall, I think it was well done. They needed to do something big after McIntyre had scored the clean pin on Orton. So Orton needed to be reheated here, didn't he? I think that was very important. That was vitally important to keep the feud alive between Orton and McIntyre, and to potentially book it again at the September pay-per-view, which I'm sure they will do. So,
I like the little detail of Randy Orton being so offended that Drew McIntyre was offering him a pity title shot. That was a great touch. Because you can imagine for Randy Orton, that's like a kick in the balls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mary, we've got loads of more stuff on Raw to talk about. We also had Asuka and Sasha Banks in a rematch, in a lumberjack match for the Raw Women's title. And Asuka ended up retaining the title with Shayna Baszler involved on the outside. We also saw earlier in the show Shayna taking on Bayley. And it's all leading us now to Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, unlikely allies, taking on Sasha and Bayley for the tag titles at Payback. They obviously had to put quite a lot of stuff in here in the one show because they've Payback as this Sunday. Was it effective?
Well, it was a busy show. It never slowed down. It never sagged. There was a lot of energy on the show. I mean, there was almost no dull or duff moments to it. So I think overall, this was a really interesting episode of Raw, I thought. I mean, partly by necessity, because as you said, they had to arrange these matches for this Sunday's event. I think the Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax tag team is an intriguing combination. They don't like each other, but they are united in their desire to stick it to Bayley and Sasha Banks, aren't they? So, it was quite interesting, wasn't it, when they had the match between... Bayley and Baszler, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nia Jax came out, and then she ended up attacking Baszler at ringside, and then Jax continued beating down Baszler in the ring as Bayley and Sasha Banks are retreating and urging Jax to continue the attack on Shayna Baszler. And then Nia and Baszler kind of stopped in the tracks and looked at these two heels who were trying to manipulate them, And it was his stare down and Bailey and Banks Scarpa, they fled. So I thought that was well done, is that they would, you know, these two, truce was established because they have a common enemy. So and now a common goal, which is dethroning Banks and Bailey at Payback this Sunday. So I thought it was well done. I mean, it was different. It didn't feel, it kind of felt like there was some new ideas on this show. And WWE was doing things that it doesn't normally do, kind of, you know, detaching itself from its comfort zone. And it was really good to see, really inspiring to see.
I really enjoyed Raw. I thought Raw was really busy, hectic pace. I don't want them to always do a pay-per-view 7 days after, but I think this actually helped the show.
It did. I mean, it meant that they were, you know, there's this pressure to do things and to set things up and, you know, not to phone it in and not to just waste time on the show. I mean, I think there was only two segments in Raw Underground, I think, throughout the show.
So, and, I mean, they weren't even that memorable, really, but they were, yeah, it played into, obviously, Lashley being very angry because he'd done the arm wrestling match with Apollo Crews and he ended up losing it.
Yeah.
And that led him to going and sort of destroying people in Raw Underground. I think MVP for me was the MVP of Raw. I thought he was tremendous on this show. The promo he cut on Cedric Alexander backstage with him and Ricochet, I just thought was so great. Like, he's MVP is one of those guys that he just knows the character he's playing. He knows what that character would do in any situation. And I just thought he was excellent leading Lashley around the Raw Underground as well. I thought he just killed it on this show for me.
Yeah, he did really well. I mean, his attempts to recruit Cedric, I mean, it's a sort of story that they used to do really well. And it's a shame that more people don't care about Cedric Alexander, because if they did, you know, obviously MVP's trying to persuade Cedric to turn heel on Ricochet. And it's a shame that Cedric's a character that just doesn't really, you know, have, there's not much interest in him. There's not really much stock in him there as a guy that people really care about. And people are going to be upset if he does turn heel, which presumably, although in saying that, the Hurt Business did beat up Cedric, didn't they, on Raw Underground? They beat up the Viking Raiders as well. So I don't know whether that is anything that is going to deter Cedric from joining up with Hurt Business. It kind of feels like that's his direction of travel. And if Cedric is ever going to mean anything and become a star in this company, he needs to do this heel turn. He needs to join MVP and he needs to reinvent himself as a character because he's doomed as a babyface. So it is a shame, really, that there isn't, you know, more people thinking, oh, Cedric, don't do it. You know, don't turn to the dark side. You know, this is terrible. You know, you cannot become a villain. You need to, you know, be a babyface and fight for, you know, truth and goodness and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we'll see if that happens, but hopefully it will do. And you're right, MVP's there saying all the right things. He knows his character. He is that character. And that's something that I think we need more of in wrestling, is people not playing characters, but being characters. And MVP is the character. He's not playing a character. That is him. We can believe that's him and that he really does do these things. So yeah, Raw Underground was... kind of feels like it's on the way out and it needs to just, it's just now just an unnecessary distraction. It just needs to be dropped. I don't really understand why the Hurt Business ended up beating up the Viking Raiders as well. I mean, they took an absolute pasting on Raw Underground, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Raw Underground felt like a kind of thing in the background they just kind of had to do.
Yeah. It's like, well, how is that helpful? We were told that Eric was this really tough guy and now we see that he isn't. And there needs to be, I mean, I know it's supposed to be real fighting, but it's supposed to exist to get people over and to make them stars so we care more about them. And if you're having your baby faces getting beaten up like jobbers, then what does that achieve? It doesn't achieve anything. It's counterproductive. It's a liability. It's worse than useless. So Raw Underground just needs to go.
It does. Well, also, so the main event of Raw was Dominic and Rey Mysterio as a team taking on Seth Rollins and Murphy, and they looked like they were going to be able to get the win when Dominic had went up top to take out Murphy when the lights flickered, and this led to Retribution coming out and attacking the Mysterios. and they stood on the apron and kind of stood in what seemed like the formation is going to be now. Six people, looks like three males, three females. And they went after the Mysterios. What did you think of this as a kind of end to the show, as an attack, as a continuation? Weird that we didn't see Retribution on SummerSlam, but what did you make of this main event and the interference?
I mean, I was just, I was thinking, are Retribution going to come out with like sledgehammers and smash all this expensive setup? Is that what they're going to do that? They've just spent all week building.
Thunderdome, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to happen, is it? I mean, they needed a show of force here, did Retribution, because they kind of felt, well, they weren't really part of SummerSlam. They were kind of irrelevant there. So if this act is going to end up being anything meaningful in the long run, they needed to do something despicable here on Raw. I mean, I thought Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio, that must have been a thrill for Rey teaming up with his son. And I enjoyed the tag team match. It was a good extension of that feud. Didn't really do anything, but then it wasn't supposed to. They were just there for Retribution to come out. You know, lights flickered. Rollins and Murphy withdrew. They went up to the onto the stage and they laughed as Retribution beat down the Mysterios in the ring at ringside. As you said, yeah, there was obviously women among their numbers of the Retribution crew. Do you think there's going to be a reveal next week? It sort of feels like we're getting there, doesn't it? Are they going
to? It feels like we have to get further forward now. We have to get somebody. I think the tall guy in the middle to me looked like Dominic Dijakovic.
Yeah, I think there's word, isn't it, that Chelsea Green could be among them, and she's somebody I think can be a huge star in this company. They obviously pulled her from Robert Stone. When was that? Probably about 6-7 weeks ago now. She left Robert Stone, maybe slightly longer than that.
Yeah, but it's around that time, for sure.
Yeah, and since she's disappeared, and she's somebody who I absolutely think she can be the next sort of big thing in this company as far as female performers go. So I'm hoping she's there as well. But yeah, they either need to make a statement or something more needs to be done, I think, next week. Maybe there'll be another attack on SmackDown. I don't think maybe SmackDown will be the night now that SmackDown's the show that's drawing the biggest audience. Maybe SmackDown, it'll be this Friday, that they explain what their demands are or why they're doing these things or, you know, what their purpose and goals are. What I do find a bit weird about it is that at times there's been at least a dozen members of Retribution. So how are they going to explain that?
I don't think they are going to explain it. I think we're now just meant to believe these are the six. This is what they're doing. I'm okay forgetting the other people because I'd rather there was just here are six people. We need to figure out who they are, what's their motivations, and that's it. Any more than that, I think you're, you know, because how many were in the Nexus? Seven?
I think so. Yeah,
seven. You know, once you get past that, it's you're caring for the storyline is probably going to go down drastically.
Yeah, exactly. You do need that exclusivity, and you need fewer people so that more time can be invested in each one, and they are then more likely to become stars as a result, or at least in front of this different audience if they're all NXT performers, which I'm sure they are. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next step of this. I think. I don't really want to see many more of these attacks. We need an explanation and we need a reveal of who these people are and why they're there. And I think that needs to happen within the next week. We need to be talking about that on next week's podcast.
We do, and we will see if we will. Well, listen, that is all the time that we have for here in the main podcast. Loads and loads of wrestling stuff has happened this week, Finn. And next week's payback, so we're going to have even more to do. More to talk about, more to discuss.
Indeed, we didn't even have time to talk about Aleister Black's heel turn on Kevin Owens from completely out of the blue. We didn't even have time to talk about that. You know, probably could have talked about that for an hour, could we, Kevin?
We probably could have. At least they've now got something to do. And hopefully next week there'll be some stuff to talk about. Apart from Aleister Black's very trendy eye patch attempt.
Well, yeah.
We're going to be talking about NXT TakeOver over on The Overrun, so do go and check us out there on Patreon. Also, Finn's latest Q&A has gone up with some really interesting stuff about if Steve Austin continued wrestling in 2003, what if some AEW wrestlers went to WWE, would they get the WCW treatment? Lots of good stuff in there. Any plugs from you, Finn?
No, I think we've already done enough plugs on this podcast, Kenny.
We have. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com for your annual subscription needs. Listen, thank you very much, everybody, for all your support. Thank you for giving the magazine such a good reception and continuing to support us in the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Yeah, thanks a lot.
So thank you very much, and we will talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.